Welcome to the World of Women Create podcast series, where we bring you the magical and innovative worlds of artisans and makers from the pages of our magazines, Where Women Create and What Women Create, along with special guests who are entrepreneurs and experts in their fields. We love to share great conversation with extraordinary women, women you may be very familiar with and others you may not know. My name is Jennifer Blott, and I am the editor-in-chief of Women Create. It is my pleasure to welcome you, our listeners, and all of our guests as we explore the ups and downs, challenges and triumphs, exhilaration and immense joy of living a creative life. A creative life is a life that's rarely stagnant and always leading us down surprising paths. Thank you for being part of our creative world, the world of Women Create. I am so grateful to be here today with Bonnie Christine, whose Art of Business story was featured in our winter issue of Where Women Create. Bonnie is an internationally renowned surface pattern designer, entrepreneur, and award-winning online educator. She's been creating delicate and ethereal artwork for brands and products around the world since 2009. She's a mama, artist, and fabric designer living nestled back in the hills of the Great Smoky Mountains. Her goal is to help creatives earn a living doing what they love. Her journey of being a self-taught designer and learning the hard way is exactly what drives her passion for teaching others how to become successful creative entrepreneurs. Welcome, Bonnie. It's great to have you here.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Jennifer. I'm so glad to be here.
I recently saw a post on your Instagram feed of all of the things you and your team did in 2023. And I was blown away. And first, I must say, it was really heartwarming because you didn't phrase it as these are all the things we did. It's these are all the things we did and we did together. So can you tell me a couple of these highlights?
Oh my goodness. I mean, doing what we get to do is just such, it's so fun. And it is such an honor because we really get to have the front row seat to people realizing their biggest creative dreams. It is hard to put words to. It is such an honor and it's so much fun. Last year, we had a huge year. I'm thinking about students inside our course and at our conference and at Immersion Live and sharing all sorts of stories with us about manufacturing their own products and licensing their artwork all over the world and quitting their day jobs that they didn't love, and incredible things that art can do and how art can transform people and transform their careers. And it is it's a really fun ride to be able to see everybody do it.
You know, I was overwhelmed by some of the comments from people saying you changed their lives. And the word that kept coming up, I mean, inspired, you're an inspiration. And wow, I really got a sense that this is a community that just is something special and you've helped them. I mean, one of the things I think about is, you know, you open this up for everyone, whether you want to become a full-time career artist, if you want to do this as a hobby or a side hustle, you're giving people the opportunity. Yeah. And you're allowing them to come in the door for most of your things, starting out free courses, free things to download.
Yeah, because, you know, when I started, I had a bunch of zeros. I had zero experience. I had zero knowledge and I definitely had $0. And so we open up as much as we can for everyone for free. And then of course we offer the ability to really create a career out of it. Though we just did a survey of students and I was surprised that about 30% of students are using surface pattern design as their side hustle and loving it, like intentionally having it as their side hustle. And I think what a cool thing to be able to do for joy and extra income. And it has so much freedom, like flexibility, and also taps into that human need to create, which I think is something that we're really coming back to. We are innately in need of being able to create things, you know?
That's amazing. And give me a sense, what are some of the day jobs of people who use this creative outlet as a side hustle?
Well, I actually don't know. Who knows what they're doing? But I suspect that maybe it's not creative. you know, when I was starting and trying to learn how to do this, I had to have a day job because I wasn't making any money with surface design yet. And so this was 2009 through 11-ish. And my goodness, I worked as a yoga instructor for children at a YMCA. I was a receptionist at a spa, and I was a woman's personal assistant in those times. It just didn't really even matter because I was on a mission to make my dream come true. So I did what I had to do to really make ends meet. And I was head down focusing on creating this career in the side.
So when you talk about your dream, tell me how it came about, the day when you said, I want to design fabric. I want to create wallpaper, fabric, gift wrap. I mean, I know I'm leaving out things. How did it come about?
Yeah. So for me, it started with fabric. So my mom is a sewer. She's a quilter. She's a seamstress. And she owned a quilt shop or fabric store for the majority of my life. And so when I went to school, I went to business school, and I wanted to be an entrepreneur, though I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I graduated college. I married my high school sweetheart. We moved back to our hometown, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. So my mom hired me and I worked with her in the fabric store. And one of my jobs there was to meet with reps and look at the fabric that was coming in and decide what we wanted to carry in the store. And it was months after I had been working there that I'll never forget. I was walking down this aisle with fabric on both sides of me. And I thought, wait a second, this is someone's job. Like, this is someone's career. They are designing fabric. And it just was like everything all at once was like, that's what you want to do. That is what you want to do. The only problem was I didn't know how to do it. There was, no one teaching. There were no online courses at the time. And the whole industry felt very kind of held close to the chest. And so I just didn't have any experience. I didn't even know what I needed to know. And so it was this big dream that I just felt like, who are you to even consider this? But I decided to just go for it.
And tell me about your first big breakthrough.
Well, I would say my first big breakthrough was just getting started. And that was a big breakthrough in and of itself, because I don't know if you've ever felt this way, Jennifer, but it was such a big goal that I just let the overwhelm completely halt me in my tracks. And so like I had decided this, I had told my husband, I had told my family, and I woke up one morning and I realized that it had been 6 months since I had decided that I wanted to do it. And I had done nothing in order to even start. And it was just that crushing overwhelm of like analysis paralysis. I don't know what I don't know. And I don't know how to even get started. And so I just, with a lot of determination and a little feistiness over how much time I had let be wasted, decided to start doing one thing every day, just in efforts of scooching myself, inching myself forward. And so that day I Googled how to become a fabric designer and just started kind of answering the questions that I had. And so what that did for me was just, it really took my sight from way out far in front of me to like right in front of me, because every single day I knew what I could do to just inch forward. There was never a day where I was like, well, I'm out. I don't know what I need to do next. And so I obsessed over this. And I don't think that we obsess over things as often as we should, like a good obsession, like a healthy obsession with really getting after something. And so I didn't let a single day go by. I mean, some days it was only 15 minutes, but not a single day went by where I didn't take action. And it took 18 months and I signed my first licensing contract.
I remember in your story, you mentioned 2012 was when that first contract came about.
Yep.
Now, something else in your story that really resonated was this idea, you know, early on, it was challenging. You had two young kids at home. Your husband was working outside the house. You said you were trying to do a lot of things during nap time, and nap time is unpredictable. And you said you became a serious student of time management skills and how to sort of focus and push away the distractions. As a chronic multitasker to a fault, I struggle with time management skills, and I would love to know a few of the things you started implementing that made a difference.
Well, I love this question. And just to be very clear, I think it's something that we as creatives will always have to be really intentional about. I still struggle with it today. I think that focus for the creative is our superpower, yet it's our rarest resource. I think that it is so hard for the creative mind to focus, specifically in a world that has been created to distract us. And so it demands like very intentional showing up in order to focus. And when I say focus, I mean doing one thing for like a good 90 minutes and not more than one thing, with no interruption, with no checking email or checking Instagram or looking at your phone or doing the tab thing, like one thing for a good 90 minutes, like every single day. That would be what I call like in your flow. So when everything kind of like melts away. Now, I find it very easy to get into a flow when I'm doing something like working on art in Adobe Illustrator or painting. Like you get that just in the moment flow. And it's more difficult to get there when you're doing something like writing an article or, you know, you just, anytime something feels a little difficult, you go for like something that will make you feel accomplished. So you'll answer an email or respond to a comment. So we have to really watch our behavior and figure out how to hone that focus. So yeah, I didn't do this until I had children because I didn't have to. I think also when you have all the time in the world, you're not precious about it. And so I got a lot done, but you know, I wasted a lot of time as well without really knowing it. I felt important, but it wasn't until I had children and all of a sudden my window of time got reduced to what, maybe 3 hours a day during a couple of naps, that I realized how to focus and how to hone my energy, how to let things that weren't, we say this phrase on my team, is the juice worth the squeeze? And it was this way of figuring out like what was not worth the squeeze anymore, like what was taking up 90% of my time, but not producing 90% of my results. And so, yeah, what I realized was a couple of months into having this reduced amount of time to work, I was really still accomplishing my biggest goals and tasks that I needed to accomplish. And that was through really learning how to manage my time. So there's a bunch of different things we could go into here, like batch working, doing similar tasks in the same time frame, doing time blocks, which is this focus thing. I've got this time cube on my desk that, depending on which way you set it, will set a timer. It's just analog, like for 15, 30, 45, or 60 minutes. And so I use that to help me hyper focus in on one thing at a time. Removing distraction. I mean, I have to treat myself like a toddler sometimes. Like I have to take my phone and put it in another room because I haven't shown myself trustworthy to have it nearby. You know,
most of them, but most of us aren't.
No, most of us are not. So what do we have to do to set ourselves up for success when it comes to creating the focus, the time, and the time that we need in order to be successful on our goals?
So your podcasts impart so much great information. I've learned so much from you just listening to them. One another thing that resonated was this idea of boundaries, when you basically said at a certain point, you were not going to look at emails past a certain time at night before bed. And what I really am curious about is you said in the morning, you have a morning ritual and you try not to log on till about 10:30.
Yeah.
So tell me about the ritual and like how you start your day.
Well, that's interesting because my New Year's, I don't want to call it a resolution, but has been a different morning ritual. So I'll tell you about it, but let me tell you about the boundary first. So the boundaries really came to me after, well, I think the entrepreneur struggles with so much as it comes to boundaries. We have to admit that we are addicted to this effort of checking, like checking our email, checking our messages, checking our Slack, checking. And we have to really own that that is the fact. For instance, if you can't not check your email until, let's say, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you've got an issue. You've got this addictive nature to checking. And so there's this thing that happens for the creative mind that we end up showing up and being reactive to the day rather than owning the most precious time, which is typically first thing of your workday for our creative work. And so if you show up and start checking, you've lost control of the day. You will start addressing and responding and attending to all of the needs. And so we have to really fight for taking back the time that we need in order to do our deepest and best work. That's how every successful creative found their success. But it gets more and more difficult, the busier and busier, and the more important people are who need things from you and people who are helping you. Like, it is a battle every day of your life to protect this time that you need to do your deepest work. And so something that was happening for me with boundaries was that I would potentially see something outside of my work time that needed addressing, and then I wouldn't be in a posture to be able to address it. So let's say I'm in the bed going to sleep and I see something. It could be upsetting, like a customer that wasn't happy, or they are mad about something. Or more likely, it's just someone who needs something and it feels urgent. And well, okay, so now you've disrupted your mind for the entire night unless you go to your laptop at 9 p.m. when that's family time and address this. So like, what are we doing? Why can't we only check when we're in the posture of I am checking email and I will be able to immediately respond to anything that needs responding to? So I think, again, it's just really taking a step back and looking at our behavior and saying, like, is this setting me up for success, or is this something that's disrupting my mind and my flow and my energy?
In your Art of Business story, you talk about your studio, which is four rooms. Mm. And if I remember correctly, one of those rooms has no technology, no computer. It's where you do your creating.
That's right.
I love that.
Yeah. Now, listen, let's go back to the early years where I had a little desk in the corner of my bedroom. That's where it was for many, many years. Then I had a home office. I was at a home office and I had children not old enough to be in school yet. And those years were like distraction was the name of the game, just interruptions constantly. About 3 years ago, I was able to renovate this little studio I live in a tiny town, in the downtown of our tiny town with my husband and my sister. So the three of us are here. It's about seven rooms. I have four of them. So I've got the one that we're in, which is really where I'm at most of the time. I've got cameras and, you know, computers, and this is where I do like computer work. And then the one room that has no technology in it. It's a desk with all my painting supplies. It is a lovely spot. And so I try to spend about at minimum 30 minutes there a day, just practicing that need to create. And then I have a recording studio, which at this point, my business is 90% education. And Jennifer, I spent a good decade not having a good recording setup, just having to completely flip the room I was in and clear everything and set up the camera. And it just felt like this huge barrier to entry. And so I buckled down this year and made a recording studio that is audio proof. All the lighting is controllable and it's got, I can walk in, hit some buttons and be recording within 30 seconds. It is incredible.
Just you, yourself, and you. You don't have a tech team. It's just you.
Me, myself, and me. I had a tech team help, and I've actually got a list of like all the gear. If your audience wants it, we can give them the link. But yeah, it's pretty sweet, and it has changed my life because all of a sudden barrier to entry has been removed.
It's amazing. And so with your podcast, I read that you want to try to do batch work with those. Do you try to do like two or three in a row?
Yeah. So the podcast is about a year and 4 months old, and this has been a test of mine. I do two episodes a week, and I originally thought that I would do eight episodes at a time, which would batch like a month, right? And I found it incredibly difficult. it's not so much the time, right? Because I should be able to do that in about 5 hours. So technically you should do that in a day, but my goodness, I could not mentally transition between big concepts that back to back to back to back. And, but also like you can hear in my voice, like the first one is very like engaging and conversational. And then the last one, like my voice just starts to drone a little bit. Like even it just is a lot. So what I've done is that I did buckle down and do a big batch of 8 episodes. And now my routine is that I record 2 episodes every Tuesday. So every Tuesday, so we're a good month in advance. And then I just tack on 2 every single week. And I can do that. I can do 2 in a day, no problem.
Well, for those who are listening to this podcast, you must tune into Bonnie's podcast. Your voice is soothing. I know you've said this when you talk about your email, it's as if you're sitting having coffee with your audience, and it's really earnest, and it's the information is valuable, not just for creatives, but just anyone trying to navigate having a business or just getting more order in their day.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's fun. I like to talk to the creative entrepreneur over there. It doesn't have to be art. It can be anything at all. But just the things that we manage as an entrepreneur, and yeah, things like this, like time management and our morning routines and boundaries and all those things that are applicable to so many people who are doing, you know, it's hard to be in charge of yourself, be your own boss.
Speaking of which, I know you now have a team. Tell me when, at what point in the business were you able to bring other people on and some of the first sort of things you were able to let go of? Because I know it's really hard when you're an entrepreneur to have other people take on some of that work.
So difficult. Again, just one of the most difficult things and also one of the most necessary things. And so, Jennifer, I spent too much time. I waited about a decade before I had any help in my business. And looking back, I could have and should have done that at about the 5-year mark, maybe even sooner. So I just didn't know how to hand anything off to anybody. And it finally got to the place where specifically I was spending like 3 days a week managing inbox alone. I was very much not having time to do important work. And that's kind of where we set ourselves up to be. I think that we wear this badge of solopreneur as an honor. And arguably, I think it really dilutes our ability to make as big of an impact as we can. Because we can't do it all ourselves. We're not an expert at everything ourselves. And quite frankly, we're wasting a lot of time trying to figure things out that we could have had help with. So I like to think about trying to stay in our zone of genius. Zone of genius is where you are both doing the things that you love to do and the things that only you can do. And then delegating, I mean, let's set the goal of delegating literally everything else. What if you could spend 100% of your time in your zone of genius? And so that's where it started. That was my first employee. I knew that that goal was a really long-term goal if I could ever get there. And this was someone who I think just wore multiple hats. Maybe you would call her a virtual assistant, but really she was just a mini me. She helped me do all the things that I helped. So there was not a lot of clarity around that role. And I think that there's something to be said for permission. Like if you can wear multiple hats, so can at least one other person on your team. And so they just came alongside me to help. And then, so it went really from 1 to 2 to 4 to 6 to 8 to now we're at 12. And 5 are full-time, the rest are part-time. And then that's not counting contractors. So we also work with many contractors, but 12 core team members. And it is honestly like, it is a beautiful thing. It is just one of my most favorite things to do is to lead this team and do work with other people together.
I heard your podcast and it, again, another one that really resonated. I would love for you to share this story because this shows how much you were devoted to every single aspect, like 5,000%. Was that Christmas when you saw an email about the calendars you had created, and then you solved this amazing problem, and you must have made people so happy, but you went above and beyond.
You heard that story in the podcast about boundaries, because clearly I had none at the time.
Some of us don't. I mean,
I know. And so the plight of like a handmade seller, right? So this was before I had anybody on my team and before I had any boundaries. And I checked my email on Christmas Day. Not that I was working. I was literally in the kitchen and I had my phone and I just popped my email open. And I had like, I can't remember, like 6 or 7 emails. I had been selling these huge acrylic calendars. So like 4-foot by 8-foot acrylic calendars. And I had sold them like in November. I had out of my mind, but I didn't realize that so many people were going to give them as Christmas gifts and they had all shattered in shipping. And they were so expensive. They were like $400 for me to print wholesale. And then they were expensive to ship as well. And I was like, well, I can't ship them any better than I did. So anyways, yeah, what I ended up doing was reaching out. There was about 7 people. They were all in the United States. And I ended up reaching out to each of them, finding a printer within driving distance to them, and owning that whole process. So working with a printer to get one reprinted and delivered to their home. It was, yeah, that was the last time I sold calendars.
But do you still in your personal life use one of those calendars each year?
Yep, I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, describe it for us.
Well, it is a 4-foot by 8-foot acrylic annual calendar. So it's a wipe clean at the end of the year and redate for the coming year. But really, the most impactful thing about it is that it's your entire year at a glance. And so this for me was like a moment in time in my business. I also think one of the things that creatives struggle with so much is inconsistent income. And it wasn't until I started annual planning, I put everything on my calendar and I was like, well, no kidding. That's why Q4 is so hard, because I have nothing in Q4 that generates income. But the other thing that it does is like the creative will have an idea to make money, but they need money now. Like they need money today to pay bills, and they haven't built in a runway to launch the thing or talk about the thing or make the thing and market it and sell it. And so creating this annual plan where you put everything out and you schedule all of your releases and you put your family vacations and birthdays and everything on it will help you kind of streamline your whole year. You'll know what you're doing in June. And so you can start talking about it in April. And also you'll know what you're doing in August. So in February, when someone asks you to host a conference, you'll be able to say yes or no based on your availability. So huge turning point in my business and as an entrepreneur.
And at the end of each year, do you take a photo of it or somehow document everything that was on the calendar?
Probably not like as methodically as you envision, but like, yeah, I've got pictures of them. But everybody's going to want one now. So let it be known that there are people who make them and it is not me. But you can look up annual calendars, and there's also some great paper versions as well. But I'm a big believer in having it on the wall. So the entire year, you cannot do this in a planner. You cannot do it in a monthly calendar. You have to see your entire year at a glance.
I love it. I need one.
You do.
One thing I want to ask you about is philanthropy. I know you've given your time. Recently, I know you participated in an event to raise money for schools in Kenya. And you also give away scholarships for people to take your immersion courses. Why is that important to you?
What a lovely question. We do. I don't actually get to talk about it very often, but we do. I think giving back is one of the core principles that we've had. And when I say we, I mean my husband and I from the very beginning. And so we started giving 10% of the business's gross revenue when it was making $1,000 a year. We always gave 10%. And so we still do to this day, which is significantly more. And I think the point is that if you won't give a dollar out of 10, you won't give 100,000 out of 1,000,000. And so we dedicated this practice just early on of this real responsibility and posture of giving back. It's not ours even to begin with. It is that we are good stewards of money. And when money comes to us, we do good with it. So we still do that today. We give 10% of our gross annual revenue. We also do giving through the team, which is really fun. So the team gets to basically like nominate a charity of their choosing, and everybody kind of votes on anonymously which one they want to honor that year. And then the business gives 10 grand in that person's name to the charity. And then all charities do also get $1,000. So everyone gets something. We do a scholarship program. So we give 10 spots away to our course a year. That's course is $2,000. So that's significant for people who really want to take it and don't have the means to. And then a particular event that you're speaking of was with Stu McLaren, and he comes together once a year with entrepreneurs to talk about what we're seeing shift in the industry. And all of the proceeds go to his nonprofit called Village Impact. And their goal is to build schools in Kenya. They've been around for a long time, 10 years. They've done incredible work in Kenya. And so we were able to raise that event, raised over $400,000 for their schools in Kenya. That was just a couple of months ago. So really incredible. I mean, I think honestly, it's fun. It is so incredibly fun to be able to see a need and be able to meet it. And that's what we talk about when we talk about impact. Like, first and foremost, take care of yourself, take care of your family, and set yourself up for long-term financial success. And then start impacting the people around you, impact your community and the world at large. So my membership, Flourish, we give a percentage of that to a nonprofit called Healing Waters, where they bring water to countries and towns that don't have clean water. And I think it's just a really important part of building community on an effort to make the world a better place.
I agree. And I think you also, many of the people you mentor and you coach and who look up to you will also find the value and do something similar when they're able. You know, I feel like giving is something that spreads, you know?
Yeah, me too.
So speaking of that course, your surface design immersion course, tell us what that's about, when it's happening. Can people still sign up for it?
Absolutely. So yeah, this course it's incredible. It's an 8-week course on surface pattern design, and it'll really take the beginner who has like no existing knowledge. Some students do, of course, but you don't have to coming in. And I teach Adobe Illustrator from the ground up. So you learn the entire program. You can use it professionally forever after that. So after Adobe Illustrator, which is so incredible, we get into creating repeating patterns, which is what you create for things like fabric and wallpaper and gift wrap and stationery. And then we move into collections. So developing those into collections and portfolios, building a portfolio with those collections. And then we move into art licensing, which is, I think, just one of the most exciting ways to monetize your art is to license it to companies who are in need of art. And so you license your collections, and then we move into creative entrepreneurship, where we get to talk about things like this, like time management and leadership, and also like email list growth and authentic organic growth on social media, and how to really have a brand and a business and wrap your mind around all those business things.
And how long does it last? And does everyone come together on Zoom or a similar platform?
Yeah, so it's an 8-week course. There are 6 modules. And so the modules are released at the beginning of each week. And then in addition to that, I do live Q&A calls every week. So the course content pre-recorded, it is also brand new for 2024. We're so excited about it. Then I do live calls for Q&A. And then of course we have a community. And so we have about 30 experts that come in inside the community that are alumni who have found, you know, success through the course. And they also come in and help me take care of students. So we typically have around 3,000 students. And so it's a lot. It's a lot of community, a lot of getting to know each other, a lot of feedback given on people's work and questions answered. And so we'll have a whole team that comes in to really support students. And it's We actually don't call it a course. We call it an experience. It comes with a 400-page workbook. It's a whole, we have like opening ceremony and graduation ceremony and lifelong connections and community and friendships made through it every year. But we do only offer it once a year. And enrollment opens in February every year. And so we're gearing up for it this year.
And I'm guessing your students are from all over the world.
I think last year we had 66 countries represented inside the course. Yeah.
Okay. So this may pertain to my next question, which is about your email list. But my question is, how do people hear about the course? How do they find you?
Well, I would say a lot of different ways. I think I kind of want to go back and talk about at the beginning. At the beginning, I grew what we call organically for about a decade. So organic traffic is all about putting things out into the world and people finding them naturally and organically, but also through word of mouth. So we have an incredible alumni student base. They alumni come back and retake the course over and over again. And then they also tell people about it all the time. And so if you are an alumni, so grateful for you, love you so much. And so a lot of it is word of mouth. A lot of it is just sharing. Now, the first time I opened the course was in 2018, and I had about 8,000 people on my email list. And that was really after 9 years of organically growing it. You know, I had a website and a blog and a little like sign up for our newsletter. And that's how I did it. And we had 352 students that year. And that was incredible. Jennifer, I'm not weird about talking about money, but women before me who shared what they were able to accomplish inspired me. So I'm going to talk about money.
Please.
Is that okay?
Absolutely.
So on that list of 8,000 people, that was a $352,000 launch, and it changed my life. I don't know what I was expecting. I mean, I do know what I was expecting. My like stretch goal was 100 people, and I thought that that would have changed my life. And so the 352 absolutely changed my life. And so then I started kind of amplifying our efforts with paid traffic. And now I would love to talk about this as a creator, as a creative to a creative. There's this feeling of like, ew. And I just want to eradicate that altogether, because what an incredible opportunity we have today. If we have something that makes an impact in this world, whether it's education based or whether it's something beautiful, like a piece of artwork, it is our duty to make sure that people know that you have something that can benefit them. And the interesting thing is that when we used to rely on organic growth, which is still absolutely a thing, very important and possible, but there weren't like algorithms to manage back in the day. And there is now. And so that's okay as well. I think that fair enough, right? Because in not that long ago, if we wanted to get our message out, we had to go with a one-to-many approach, right? So we had to pay for a TV commercial or a billboard or a newsletter or a magazine ad. And so you're hoping that a small percentage of people who see this resonate with it. And today, through paid traffic, so things like Pinterest ads or Instagram ads or Facebook ads, you can get your message and what you have in front of exactly the right person. Target based on their interests. I mean, I actually love it from the consumer side. Like, I'm on Facebook for the ads. I'm like, no one knows me better, so tell me, show me what I want to see. Same with Pinterest. I love it. And so what an opportunity we have, even if it's $10 a day, to boost our efforts and get more eyes, the right eyes, on what we have that could potentially change someone's life. And so anyways, that's how I view paid traffic. We take about 8% of our gross annual revenue every year and put it back into marketing, which is completely acceptable. I think also we need permission to just put some of our money that we're making back into marketing. That's what a business is supposed to do. And so today, that's what we do. 8% of our overall gross annual revenue goes back into growing the business.
your email list that you created and grew really has brought so much to you, correct? Yeah. Your story, you talk about it, and you just kept doubling and doubling and doubling. And how many people are on your email list now?
165,000.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And that's so, I mean, that's not lost on me. So it went from 8,000 to 16,000 the next year, to 32 the next year, to about 68 the next year, to about 112. So it gets more and more difficult to double, but if you double your email list, you will double your revenue. And so in all this land of possibilities and shiny objects that you could do, if you focus on one thing, you focus on your email list. And that's important because email is still today the number one way people are receiving information. You know, less than, oh goodness, I think less than 3% of people who follow you on social media see your posts. But the more important thing is that you don't own your social media. So if something were to happen and that business, like let's say Meta, who owns Facebook and Instagram, let's say they go bankrupt, let's say they get hacked, let's say that your account just goes poof and disappears, which absolutely happens to people every single year, then where would you be? Because you don't own any of that. And so I love social media, but I think that it's the perfect place for handshakes. It's to get to know each other, to let them in behind the scenes, to invite them though to join your email list, because that is something that you own. Meaning if I were to go into the biggest launch, the biggest release of the year, and on opening day, Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest were to go down, I'd be okay. I wouldn't be so worried. And that's my hope for everyone else as well, that you've got something that you can truly rely on.
And this idea of sending out an email with so much of your wisdom and information, but doing it free is important to you, right? I mean, I know a lot of artists are starting to do a free newsletter and then say a paid Substack newsletter. Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself doing that or just always keeping it free?
I don't. I have had an idea. I'll share with you in a second. But yeah, no, I think about, I would say like 80% of what we do is free. And I think that's really important. And my focus is on serving the creative, truly. And knowing that when there is something that invites you to go a deeper level, invites you to change, transform considerably, right? Like perhaps start a new career, then we've got options for that as well. So our focus on the email list is to serve, and as well as the podcast is to serve information for free. And then of course, when we do have something, we'll announce that as well. But I would say it's probably a good 80-20. 80% of it is only free value. And then when we do have something, we've got a coaching program and the course and the membership, then we'll announce that as well. But it's certainly not the primary focus. The only paid newsletter that I'm not doing this. I shouldn't even talk about it. But the only one I've thought about doing is like for other entrepreneurs, that's like super transparent. Like, how's the business doing? What are our stats? What are our numbers? What are we seeing shift in the industry? What are we doing differently? Like that kind of thing, just because I would personally pay for that. But it's not even in the works. So
I want to ask you a couple of fun questions. The first one is, what do you do for fun? I know that creating is fun and mentoring is fun, but like, what do you do when you step away from the studio?
Isn't that interesting? Because I think creatives have this way of monetizing everything we do, or like wanting to, you know, like I'm going to learn pottery. Ooh, I could sell those. I think it's really important that we not monetize some things. Now, I have an 8 and a 10-year-old. So a lot of what I do for fun is like jumping on the trampoline. But if it's just me, I love to garden. I love to garden and I love to cook. So I cook every night and I do a big, beautiful flower and vegetable garden in the summer. And that is what is nurturing to my soul.
And you make time. So you must turn things off at a certain point to be able to get into the kitchen and start your dinner.
I do. So I think that entrepreneurs don't really ever turn their brain off. And so I find it important to have a handful of things that you do that really do help you turn your mind off. Cooking is one for me.
You're an inspiration. You manage your time a lot better than I do.
Well, now don't forget that I have a lot of help. I have a lot of help.
It's funny. I know that in the issue you were featured in, another artist just coincidentally had mentioned that she had taken your course and you'd inspired her. I can only imagine what that feels like. You know, what's one of the best compliments you've received?
When someone meets me, they say they're not surprised that I am exactly who they thought I was. I think that that's probably the best compliment. Just like a good vote for authenticity, like being really who you are, you say you are, you know. Comments like being an inspiration and changing people's lives, they're really hard to digest. I think it's a testament to, like, you never know what the ripple effect is of the work that you do. Same for you, Jennifer, with the Where Women Create series and all the work that you do. Like, you will never know the ripple effect of what you have done for people in this world. And such a reason for anyone who's listening that is debating on giving up. Like, you'll never know. You'll never know the one person who you just impact their lives in a way that you'll never know. And you have to know that it's happening, and just let it be. Let, like, be a vessel, like, let it flow through you and just change lives.
That's beautiful. You inspire me. You definitely do. And like I said, your podcast is just, it just emphasizes things that really make sense. And I feel like there's something in it for everyone. So
thank you. That's a really sweet compliment too. Thank you.
So I want to end it. We always like to end the podcast by asking our guests a question. If you were to have a dinner party with five creative individuals, living or dead, who would they be?
Yeah. Okay. It would be Joanna Gaines on my bucket list. She's coming to my dinner. Yes, she is. Oprah, obviously. Are they friends? They should be. And I would love to make them friends. So let's just go ahead and pull up a chair, Oprah and JoJo. Like, probably Martha Stewart. Like, what a fascinating, like, she really coined so much for us. And, you know, she's been on a wild ride. I would love to just hear her speak.
She seems like she'd have a good sense of humor.
Right? You know? She really does.
Yeah.
Jesus. I would have Jesus at my dinner. Like, creator of all things. Like, the most creative person ever. Like, I would love that. Let's just talk. I got to have one more.
You don't have to.
You know what? I would invite you.
Oh, oh, well, thank you.
Let's just get together.
Oh, I haven't been to a great dinner party in a long time. I love good conversation with people.
That would be fun.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Thank you. Your story was amazing. And just having an opportunity to absorb some of your wisdom has been really, really wonderful. Yes. And I don't say that lightly. Thank you. And I wish you a great 2024. We are going to be posting links to your podcast and your website. And hopefully you will hear from some of our listeners for your course.
You know, one of the most, really the most impactful publications I've ever been in has been Where Women Create. And I love it when people end up in my world because they found me through this magazine. So incredible, the work you're doing. So thank you very much for having me.
Thank you again for joining us today for our World of Women Create podcast. In a world filled with endless stories, it is our mission to share the memorable personal journeys and lessons learned of the extraordinary women in our community. Their stories are stories that enlighten us, inform us, and ignite the creativity that lives in each of us. Women Create is grateful that you are part of our creative world.